just locking in and making eye contact with your kids goes such a long way in terms of building trust and psychological safety.
Welcome to Fatherhood on Fire. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan. If this is your first time listening, thank you so much. This is the podcast where we celebrate fathers who inspire us, elevate the conversation on fatherhood, and inspire those accepting their role. In this episode, we're talking with Dave Neff. He is the Chief Revenue Officer of Prolific, a strategic growth firm based in Indianapolis. Prior to that, he helped start and was the CEO of Edge Mentoring, a whole life intergenerational mentoring nonprofit for 6 years. He's also the father of 3 children, all under the age of 5. In this episode, Dave shares with us the importance of mentoring in his life, how to be a good mentee, and ideas for you to introduce healthy mentoring relationships into your children's lives. He also shares with us his thoughts on what skills companies will need in the future and what we as fathers should be learning and encouraging our children to learn. We also have a great conversation about technology and the balance between human interaction and digital skills, the pros and cons of each, and some of the pitfalls that we need to watch out for. I'm super grateful for the opportunity to connect with Dave and to share this conversation with you. Let's light the fire.
All right, Dave, thank you so much for being with us today on Fatherhood on Fire.
Hey, Ryan, I'm thrilled to be on. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, so excited to learn about your experiences and what you, are imparting on your children. Before we get to that, Dave, what fuels your fire?
Great question. I think people are what fuel me in a curiosity and love truly for others that's animated by my faith, my Christian faith in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. And so I feel like I'm always studying people. Obviously, first and foremost, that should be my wife and my kids. But even in my career, I'm just really fascinated by people and try to keep people at the center of everything that I do, because I just think relationships and how we steward those are the most critical asset that we have.
Yeah, man, that's such a good answer that I think someone who's come to you, especially as you come into fatherhood, where you start to get really curious about people, is you're responsible for these little ones, and why are these crazy things happening, tantrums and a mess? So you've had a really interesting journey professionally that's really enabled you to explore and develop that curiosity for people. Recently, you're now the Chief Revenue Officer for Prolific. Before that, for 6 years, you started and grew Edge Mentoring, so intergenerational mentoring. So tell us a little about your philosophy for mentoring, and then we'll take that into how you're imparting that on your kids.
Yeah, Edge was a really unique career opportunity. I think I was 29 when I left Exact Target to go step into this nonprofit startup. And, prior to Exact Target, I had worked for the Pacers. So I share that because I feel like this notion of mentoring, whole life, intergenerational mentoring really came about when I was working for the Pacers right out of college. I think I've always been somebody, I grew up certainly it's very fortunate to have a home where my 2 parents are still married. They loved each other. They loved me and my 2 younger sisters. But my dad's in the medical field. And so when I started my career in business, it was a very different context than what he does in seeing patients all day, every day. And so working for the Pacers really exposed me to just a ton of amazing people, leaders in the city of Indianapolis, business, civic, government. And I think I've always just tried to observe people and what makes people great or special in sort of their unique way. What's their secret sauce? And even at 22, 23 at the Pacers, I remember just like coming across, be it a CEO or a managing partner, just different leaders of organizations in the city, and certain things about individuals I really liked. Some I was like, that's not, wouldn't be my speed, but seems to work for them. And so I think as it relates to mentoring, I think great mentoring relationships, there has to be sort of an inherent chemistry. So that doesn't mean, just because someone's had success that they're going to be a phenomenal mentor, right? There's got to be sort of this chemistry between the mentee and the mentor where both parties are leaning into the relationship. That's not because you're exactly alike. I think mentoring sometimes gets a bad rap that people only want to mentor people that are just like them, you know, same race, same socioeconomic background, those sorts of things. Like, you know, not at all. I think I can think of mentors where there are some similarities, but then I think of some mentors that I learn a ton because we're very different. But there's still sort of that chemistry, that X factor that's at times hard to put your finger on. You just know that every interaction you leave with this individual, you want more of it, right? It's invigorating, it's life-giving, you're learning, they're learning. It's a two-way value street. And so I think I've just been fortunate. I feel like I've been just placed in, around some amazing people. And one last thing on this is I'd say, I think for a mentoring relationship to really thrive, it's not a 50-50 sort of commitment. If you're entering in as the mentee, typically that's age, right? It's not always age, but if you're younger, I really think on the mentee to drive that relationship, to come prepared to interactions, to ask good questions. And, you know, the mentor's job in my book is to be available and accessible. And I just, if the mentor shows up and is willing to meet amidst their demanding schedule, the mentee needs to be really respectful of that and seek to make the best use of the time and come prepared.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. That's something that I know I struggled with, and you know, my early career of wanting people to pour into me and wanting them to take the onus. And what you said really rings as I reflect on that, say, okay, yeah, that's where I dropped the ball, where it needs to be my responsibility of reaching out and in initiating that conversation. So you said a couple of things that are really interesting that pertain to fatherhood. You know, and other people a lot of times are saying that like you only get 18 summers, or I was talking with somebody recently where their kid's 9, like, oh, it's halfway over. I'm thinking about now my relationship with my father as an adult and like how important it is to have the village raising us as adults as well. Like raising adult children isn't easy, as I'm sure anyone there, but so kind of a bit of a tangent to get to this. So you get this group of mentors around you. So what do you feel is like the mentor role in fatherhood, with kind of that 80-20 mindset? How does, how does that work?
Yeah, really good point. Different application certainly than what we were doing at Edge, but you know, my kids, Ryan, are 4, 2 and then 2 months. And so, you know, I've heard it said that kids love their mom, but they live for their dad. Mm-hmm. And just think about that, right? It's just like a lot of talk, a lot of research, right, on kids who grew up without a father figure in their life and sort of the emotional trauma or damage that can cause, even unknowingly. And so as I think about, as my kids get older, you know, my kids are still obviously pretty young, so I haven't deemed mentors for them, but I would love to be intentional, right? And maybe it's when they turn 12 or become a teenager, potentially have 2 or 3 men that I really respect, potentially friends of mine, who I've observed are, yes, great father figures for their own kids, but also, you know, they could have some degree of success in their professional lives, but maybe they could just take each of my kids to a meal or to coffee. And obviously I'd be very intentional about who those three individuals were. And maybe for my daughter, it would be, you know, a woman. It could be a man, but you know, a woman that, respect, it's not Joel. Joel would probably want to speak into that, my wife. But you know, I think it's just starting to be thoughtful about who are some other voices that you respect and trust to speak into your children's lives. And right now they're going to know their friends' parents, you know, people that we might go to church with and know. But I think as it gets older, it could be those individuals, or it could be people from a more of a professional background that might just stretch them beyond sort of the people they've grown up around.
Yeah, that's such a good you know, principle. It kind of makes me think about when I've gotten the opportunity to meet some of my dad's coworkers, and you get another perspective of your parents as well. Yeah. because you get to hear people like, oh, how does dad operate at work? And like, oh man, that's pretty cool. Cause we have such a, I think, linear view of our parents oftentimes. So it's important, I think, to keep that broad perspective in mind as we bring our kids into it. So like, I'm really curious, what have been some of those valuable things that you've learned from the mentors in your life, Dave?
Yeah, I think especially as it relates to fatherhood, there's actually a ritual. This is just sort of an interesting thing that I've started. And it's, I write each of my children a letter every year on their birthday. So for Lincoln, there's four letters that he has written. He has no idea, right? I don't read them to him on his birthday. That the goal here is I've got him stashed in a, you know, manila folder that maybe on his 18th birthday, I haven't fully thought through this, that I would give him, you know, all 18 of those letters, which I just think would be really cool, doing that for each of my kids. So that's just something that, you know, it's once a year. Maybe people do it more often than that, but, you know, I do keep a pretty infrequent journal, just trying to document different things that each of my kids do. But that's one thing that I'm, really, really proud of. And I think hopefully will bless them, you know, when they're getting ready to leave home for college or whatever that next chapter might be.
Yeah, that's an awesome one. Marcus Hall, our musician, he shared that, he was on the show earlier, shows me as well. I did that. It's cool for the kids. I also found when I did it, it was really good reflection for me. And I was reading this morning on another newsletter, like four bad behaviors and the bright side of them. It was like lying, taking physical risks, because there's creativity and whatnot involved in all of those. So that exercise really gives the opportunity to reflect on what do I really love and appreciate that's unique about my kids. That's awesome. So now as you've got three kids under four, and taking on this new role with Prolific, looking at growth strategies, really forward thinking from a career perspective. You know, what do you see as kind of the COVID, everybody's asking, like, where do you see the professional landscape going for dads out there who are charting their, career, or for dads who have kids approaching adulthood that are wanting to help them navigate through that?
Yeah. 2020's been, you know, one for the ages. And, you know, with what we do with growth strategy, you know, we really become trusted advisors to the CEOs and leadership teams of the organizations we work with. You know, we're seeing a lot of folks double down on strategy now more than ever, you know, reevaluating strategy in light of COVID and a pandemic. And, you know, are they prepared, you know, if something like this were to happen again? You know, clearly one of the areas that's been most impacted are live events. There's a whole industry. Indianapolis, right here in our backyard, we've done a phenomenal job building up our convention and tourism business industry. It's really a pillar, but that is an area that, you know, has really been decimated in the last 6 months. I think it'll come back, but virtual events, there's been some innovation there, but it's clearly not the same and never will be the same as being in the same room as people, because I just believe that as humans, we're hardwired to connect. And I think coming out of COVID, there's going to be a hunger to connect more than ever. I mean, Zoom and all this technology, they are phenomenal tools, but they do not replace the energy and just the experience that comes with a live in-person sort of deal. And I think, again, I have a fundamental belief that that's how we were created, to want to connect and be in relationship with others. And virtual technology, while it's great and it helps bridge us and it will get better, you know, this could be a holograph in a few years, right? Where it almost feels like we're in the same room, but we're actually not. I just don't think it'll ever truly replace, where, you know, what conventions and tourism has brought. So I think, you know, what are business leaders thinking about now? It's, you know, how do we not just get out of this alive, but also how do we come out of it like a slingshot? And I think the smart leaders are being strategic now and laying the groundwork and maybe even being a little aggressive to hire talent you know, there's a lot of people that have been displaced, right? Unfortunately, and it's not the white collar workers that have been protected. I mean, everybody's felt it in every organization. So there's a lot of talent on the sidelines or looking to make a move. And so I think smart leaders are going after the talent. And then, yeah, what are going to be sort of the some innovations or opportunities to take market share as a result of this? I just think there probably will be consolidation, right? So maybe smaller shops in certain industries aren't going to make it out of this. But, you know, if you've got a healthy balance sheet and you're a mid-sized company, I think there's an opportunity to really, really grow from this in the long term. So
what do you think of the skills that, you know, young fathers should be developing?
I think, you know, attention is the currency of our time. So the ability to be present is really, I can't overstate that enough. And I'm guilty of it, right? I mean, I struggle to put my smartphone away from 6 to 9 p.m. I'll just be honest. I do. I'll even bring it into the bath time sometimes. I always give my two older kids a bath every night. Sometimes I bring it in, throw it on the sink in there. And after I bathe them, they're playing and I might look at it. And I always regret it. It's just like, yeah, probably addicted to it, right? I'm not too afraid to own that. But I know my kids, especially as they get older, I think even Calvin at 10 weeks old notices that. You know, I've been reading a lot about just early attachment patterns in a child's development, and, you know, just locking in and making eye contact with your kids goes such a long way in terms of building trust and psychological safety. And so I'm reading a phenomenal book right now called The Relational Soul by Rich Glass. And if you're into, you know, just emotional psychology, emotional health, an area that's I'm candidly a little weak in and deficient in, as my wife will probably tell you, I need to get in the emotional weight room every now and then. It's been tremendous. So I think just being present. I know past guests of yours, Tom Short, you know, be where your feet are. I mean, it's easier, so much easier said than done, right? But I think that is just one simple thing that I want to be continually working at. And again, I think it starts from, you know, a month old, week old baby all the way up through the rest of their lives. And as they get older, they're just going to be able to call us out more when we are distracted and not giving them our full attention.
Yeah, that's such a good answer. And that pattern that actually starts at birth. There's studies that show if you stick your tongue out at a newborn baby and another person doesn't, that they'll mimic that the next time when they look at that other person. So it's there super early. And it definitely raises concerns. We've got, you know, Lucy, 14 weeks old, and she sees it. We can see her seeing it. She, you know, when we're watching a show with our two-year-old, she's craning her neck, trying to see what's going on with Moana. I can't blame her. It's a great show. But it definitely raises concerns. I think, and, you know, love to get your take on this. Younger fathers are coming into a fatherhood at a good time technology-wise, because I think we've seen the damages and the risks of tech dependence and tech addiction, and now starting to steer the ship the other way. But having spent a little bit of time working in tech with Exact Target, and obviously that's a big part of business growth, kind of what's your thoughts on the balance between being a digital native and preparing for a digital workplace with being creative and being attentive and human relations?
Well, I think, if I had the answer to this, man, I mean, it's technology, I think, has always been a phenomenal tool. I think when it sort of becomes the essence or maybe the filter through how we live our lives, that's where I start to get a little bit nervous, right? I think technology will always inherently weaken live experiences, right? I mean, I don't know about you, but you're at a breathtaking scene. Let's say you're at the Grand Canyon or Niagara Falls. I mean, everyone's natural bend, or I shouldn't say everyone, majority is like, I want to take a picture of this and upload it to Instagram, right? And I know I would do that. But just to soak in sort of the natural beauty, whether it's a scene like that or just you know, parents do all the time with kids, right? Kid does something funny or I don't know what, you know, just you want to document it. You want to share it. And I don't think there's anything bad with that, but it's just, it's, we've been conditioned, I think, through the last 10 to 12 years of social media and even, you know, a few years before that, just instant messaging of always being connected and wanting to share. And there's some good in that, but I think when it becomes sort of ultimate and replaces just our ability to be present with those that are around us or in our physical environment, just to appreciate that moment for what it is. That's where it just starts to potentially get a little toxic. So, I mean, technology's not going anywhere. You know, you look at the big 4 or 6, you know, Amazon, Google, Apple, right? I mean, Netflix, those companies are growing and profitable for a reason. So I don't think it's going anywhere, but I do think to your point, like my wife and I were at a wedding this weekend, just talking about with other couples, like, I don't know if we're going to give our kids a cell phone before they're, like, I was 16 when I got my driver's license. And I think that's probably a good age, you know, whereas today I feel like I hear about kids at 8, 9, 10 years old, they have a phone and they're texting or whatever. And so I think as a millennial parent, having lived through some of this and seen some of the damage and toll it's taken, you hear about Gen Z who they're at college right now. Most of them are a little bit younger. I think there might be a few that are a year or two out of school. They're a generation that has a lot of really good things about them, but they also seem to be a generation that has the most sort of mental health challenges, right? Emotional breakdowns, many of them identify as one of their number one fears. Whereas I just don't feel like you heard it was happening, but I don't think it was as prevalent maybe with millennials when we went off to college or Gen X or boomers for that matter. And I have a very strong, strong feeling that the ubiquitous nature of technology, smartphones, social media is the main culprit there.
Yeah. And I think the data supports that as well. So you know, you've got 4 years of fatherhood under your belt. And one thing that I find is super interesting is how, you know, becoming a parent changes us as people. What have you learned from your fatherhood journey that you're applying to the professional side of your life and the faith side of your life?
Yeah, I mean, they say that, you know, when somebody who is fortunate just to have, like I said, two loving parents and grew up in a home where we read the Bible and attended church regularly. I think when you become a father, scripture, you could read if you've already read the Bible once, say before you had kids, and you start to read same passages again as a father, right? The lens or filter for how you maybe even interpret some scripture changes, you know, as a father. And I think I want my children to, and I fail at this all the time, but I really want Lincoln, Nora, Calvin to know that there's nothing that they can do that will make me love them anymore. And there's nothing they can do that will make me love them any less, right? When they mess up and, you know, we all have reactions in the moment. If they do something that's really getting on your nerves and you lash out and, you know, you instantly kind of hate yourself for doing it. And even, you know, I ask for forgiveness sometimes from my 4 and 2 year old, right? When I make mistakes. But I think it's such a powerful, I mean, it's a game changer, right? From a perspective standpoint, and as driven as I am, yeah, I've got goals professionally and things I want to achieve. You know, I heard this recently around Father's Day of like, what if, you know, the reason you're here is not something you're going to do, but somebody you raise and what he or she goes on to do in their life, in some sort of meaningful manner. And so that's something that stayed with me, right? And just realizing, when I think I need to work an extra hour or 2 hours and cut out time with them, like, is it really that important? Because I think we all can get kind of wrapped up in our own sort of self-worth at times. So.
Yeah, one of my buddies shared that when he had his first kid, but I hadn't revisited until just now. And it makes me think of just math, just the sheer scale, right? You've got 3 kids. So what the 3 of them are going to do is far out going to weigh like what you could do individually, most likely. And that holds true for men. Sorry, right? I've got two. So what they can do, that's a really interesting perspective to bring to it. Well, so Dave, man, I'm loving connecting with you, loving the conversation. I want to get your final words of fatherly wisdom before we part today, but want to make sure that, you know, the audience has a chance to connect with you and follow your journey. So where's the best way to connect with you?
Yeah, I would just say probably on LinkedIn. I'm probably the most active from a professional platform, just Dave Neff, prolific on LinkedIn. And then email is just dneff@prolific.world. So anyone hears this and wants to reach out, I'd certainly welcome an email. We can find time to connect.
Man, love that. All right, Dave. So what are your final words of fatherly advice today?
Well, as someone that's just 4.5 years in, and now has 3 kids, and, you know, the age old question going from 2 to 3 is how's zone defense, you know? And, I just think, yeah, each child that you have does stretch you a little bit more, right? And time is finite and energy may or may not be finite. But I think for me, discipline with my own time, really being disciplined is what allows me to hopefully make time for my kids, right? My priority, which is they're my priority behind Joel and my relationship with God. And so I think just being available to your kids, being accessible. I would love to have a relationship with each of my kids that as they get older and likely will make mistakes, they call me first, not last. You know, there's a high degree of trust and knowing that while maybe I'm disappointed in their decision, they know that I love them and want what's best for them. And I think that's not going to happen when they're 13 or 16, right? That's happening right now. That's happening in how they see me love their mother, how I respond to them, even when they make mistakes right now. And so, you know, that and a lot of God's grace is what's going to, I think, enable me to hopefully have a strong relationship with my kids and to the time that they become adults. And that, you know, having 3 and I don't know if we're going to have a 4th or not, but that is sort of the big vision of, I love the idea of being 60, 70, 80 years old and having adult children that you're like friends with, right? Mm-hmm. And Lord willing, grandkids and on down. But, and I know regardless of faith, that's hard to do, right? There's a lot of even very faith-filled families and there's a lot of friction and tension and estrangement. And so, you know, my prayer is that that's not the case and that we have a home that's just filled with love and trust. And I actually pray that my kids love each other, that Lincoln and Nora, pray that they would love each other and become really good friends as brother and sister and now Calvin. So, yeah, a lot of prayer and a lot of just trying to be available and a steady presence in their lives.
That's awesome. That's such good love, trust. Oh, that's beautiful, man. Well, Dave, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Ryan, and love what you're doing with this podcast, just trying to, you know, encourage and inspire other fathers out there.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Fathered on Fire. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share with a friend. Give us a 5-star review wherever you listen to the podcasts. Most importantly, have a great week. Love yourself, love your family, and fatherhood. I'm Ryan Sullivan.